You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Not too long ago, we had Anjuli Grantham on our program to talk about her Juno Climate Change Solutionist Project, in which she identified 10 local people who have come up with their own homegrown solutions to address climate change. Sarah Lewis, who you know from the Cooperative Extension, was one of the 10 people profiled for her efforts to reduce food waste. Hello, Sarah, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for being here. First off, if I recall from our interview with Anjuli, reducing food waste is fairly high up on the list that she followed for this project, meaning that it's one of the most high-impact solutions. Is that accurate?
Yeah, and I mean, I have to definitely sort of bow to her research because that's awesome. She found out that basically it was the third. It was like number three on the list of, I don't know, what was it, something like 50 or 80 things that you can do to really make an impact. And the way we manage our food resources is right up there near the top.
In the interview, the article that she published, you're quoted as saying, "We need to solve for the pattern instead of for a single problem." What did you mean by that?
Well, that is actually something that I read by Wendell Berry. And the concept is that when you are looking at a problem, really try to, when creating a solution, basically, put it simply, don't create more problems. By creating, you know, by solving a problem, don't create others. And when you have the goal of solving for a pattern rather than solving one problem, you're actually looking at something a little bit more holistically, more as a system than as, you know, something linear. So, you know, do this, solve that. And when it comes to food, there are so many different ways that we are connected to food and food comes to us and we're connected to the farmers that we get the food from, et cetera, that finding solutions that don't create new problems is, I don't want to say easy, but very possible. You can really find solutions that solve a bunch of different problems at once.
Let's talk a little bit more about food waste. What kind of food waste happens on a larger systemic level? Could you give us a few examples?
Oh, well, on a large, you mean like sort of at the source in a way. So one thing that it is what is seen as going to be marketable is one thing. So if there is food on a farm or manufactured somewhere and, you know, there's a ding in the can or it's shaped funny or it's not quite the right color, you know, you can start there. Not all of those things are necessarily wasted because a lot of those systems at that very beginning of where sort of our food begins, they have also sorted out that reducing waste saves money. The fewer things that you need to actually throw away, something if you can put them into a different cycle, like if it's a peach that doesn't look quite as good as the others, it'll still be great frozen. You know, so things like that can happen. There's also the waste that happens in shipping. So, I mean, obviously that's something that we think about a lot here in Alaska because things have to be shipped from a long way away. And so one, that means that some of the things that we get are the varieties that will, you know, are very hearty and maybe have less flavor sometimes, not always, but can last through travel. But then by the time we get them, you know, they're nearing potentially the end of their, you know, good quality shelf life. And then lots of things get wasted at the grocery store because they go bad, you know, quicker, the longer they are past when they were harvested, et cetera, when we're talking about fresh foods. And so then you get into the household, and that's what Anjuli and I talked a lot about, because a lot of my work has to do with, and the things that I choose to do in my home have to do with up at the home level, at the household level. And so when you plan for your meals and such, when you plan what you're going to be eating over the course of the week, you're much less likely to buy things that you have no idea what you're going to do with them. And then they end up rotting in the refrigerator. So all the way from the beginning to the end, there's these places where food gets wasted all along that path.
Got it. So looking at the more like individual, family, or even community level, what changes can we make there that exacts meaningful change to this larger picture?
Oh, well, at the family level, for sure, which of course reaches out into the community level. Paying attention to what your family eats and being much more aware of what you are, not being too aspirational when you go grocery shopping, things like that. The place where I start is I have a couple of different meal plan services that I use. So they're apps or websites and things like that. And some of them cost a little bit of money. My favorite one right now, for example, is the New York Times cooking app. For something like $1.50 a month, I get access to that portion of that of their website. And they have 5 weeknight meals. And so it's 5 dinners that are all planned out, and they have the grocery shopping list and everything. And so I am able to use that. And I know that everything on my grocery shopping list for dinners is something that has a plan. And I know exactly how much I need, of it, et cetera. I know what I need to have in the pantry, things like that. And that sort of from that beginning, it helps me in my grocery shopping, saves me lots of time. I use, for example, the Fred Meyer's pickup service, which means I spend a lot less time in the grocery store, which means I am much less likely to randomly pick things off the shelf because I think maybe that might be good or because I'm hungry that day, that kind of thing. So it really focuses my food shopping to what we're going to need. And then I just have some systems in my house as well that have to do with eliminating or reducing waste or trying to keep things in a cycle as opposed to just heading to the garbage. So I know that one of the solutionists is Juno composting.
Right.
So, yeah. And so they are definitely part of my system. So I do get the curbside pickup for that because I don't have my own garden. So I live downtown, don't have any land. So that's one part of the cycle that I was always, it was pretty frustrating to me until Juno Compost started up. And now I actually know that that is going into, continuing on into another part of the system and not just going to be wasted, which is terrific. But that is one of the things I do. I have other things like, all of my, when I'm preparing vegetables to eat, I keep all of my clean scraps in the freezer until I have enough to make a vegetable broth. So many of those scraps that might otherwise be wasted or be composted, I actually turn them into something else to eat before they go into the compost bin, things like that.
Well, we should get your recipe for your vegetable stock. That sounds like a great idea.
There is none. No, it's whatever. It's one of those random things.
Just DIY. Well, you make it sound really easy, but what are some of the challenges or barriers that exist for people, especially here in Juneau, when it comes to meal planning, and how can that be addressed?
Barriers, I think the barriers would tend to be on an individual either not knowing, about the possibility of meal planning, feeling a lot of times what I come across in my work with extension is there's kind of these two views of sort of home economics topics. And one view is that a lot of those things are only for people who have money. You have to have equipment, you have to have time for some of the skills and things like that. So there's that kind of it. It's not for me because only people who are groovy natural or, who are into organic food or things like that are going to be, or foodies are going to be worried about some of, those more home ec-y type things. And then there's another sort of parallel thought that a lot of people have, which is, of course, you need to know home ec because it makes it so that you can afford, you know, it is actually for people who have to pay close attention to their finances, because the more you know, the more you are able to manage your finances and your food resources and things like that. So I do struggle a lot of times with those two kinds of attitudes about it, about home ec and these types of skills. And so that's one thing that can kind of be a barrier, is not feeling like it's for you, for whatever reason that might be. And the thing is, if you are the person in your home, or there are several people in your home who do meals, meal planning is one of those things that really does solve for pattern, if you will, going back to what we were talking about. It reduces the time you spend planning meals. And if you're using a meal planning service that focuses on simple meals, which I do, then you are also reducing your time in preparing those meals. Also, if you've got a meal plan, you can hand it off to someone else in your family. If you're busy that night, you can say, this is what we have, you know, in the refrigerator. This is what, you know, your choices are to make tonight. And it makes it so that the choices, and you can hand things off, et cetera. So it solves a bunch of things. It reduces the food waste. You save money because you're only buying what you need. Mm-hmm. And you can usually tailor those recipes to the number of people in your family, et cetera. So I really do think that sometimes it's just knowing what's out there. And some of the meal services are pretty expensive, like $15, $20 a month. And that is out of the reach of a lot of people. But some of them are pretty inexpensive. And I know that there are some free ones out there as well. So, yeah, so that's probably one of the things that I would say that happens at the household level that can be a barrier.
And how do you feel about food subscription services, HelloFresh or I think Blue Apron or something like that? Are they? Some people say they're less wasteful. Some people say they're more wasteful. What do you know about that? How do you feel about those?
You know, I have a question for you. Are either of those available in Juneau yet?
I don't know about Juneau, but I think there are some people that are
kind of hopeful.
Yeah, no, not that I know of, but I think that there are some people who are working on that locally.
Sure. So it kind of depends, I imagine. So because they aren't available in Juneau, the only experience I have with those is my college-aged daughter chooses to use one of those because it does save her money. She's in Washington State, and she feels it saves her money. I have not, like, gone through the assessment of that to know that that's really true, but I know that, you know, there are so many things to do in a household to keep a family, or even if it's just yourself, there's so many things, work, et cetera, in our lives. We have only so much bandwidth in our brains. And I have found that one of the ways that we can really reduce sort of the pressures is to use some of these services that sort of consolidate some of those tasks. And so whether it's, you know, like Salt and Soil Marketplace, where I can just go online and I can order the stuff and then it'll be delivered to my home, or quickly do all of my grocery shopping in 10 minutes online and go to Fred Meyer's and it's all gathered together for me. Or even whether it's, going that next step, which is with the HelloFresh and things like that, where they actually do the meal planning and the grocery shopping all in one. And you need to look at the time savings. You need to look at the quality of the food that's coming to you. You need to look at whether the recipes are appropriate for you. But you could really dial that in to probably be something really good. Now, one thing that I do want to say about that is a lot of the focus can sometimes be on organic, and that the best thing and the most healthy thing you can do is to purchase organic. And there just really isn't a lot of research and proven science behind that. The most important thing when it comes to the nutrition of fresh food, produce, fruit, vegetables, is how long it's been since they were harvested. Since they were harvested, from the time of harvest until the time of some kind of processing. So that could be freezing, canning, or you cooking it. And so that is actually the thing that determines how healthy, how much, you know, the nutrient load that's in certain fruits and vegetables and things is how long it's been since they were harvested. And the health benefits between like organic or non-organic, really, there are so many variables there that have to do with soil and transportation and how long it's been since they were harvested. So when you have a service that really focuses on organic, you're going to be cutting out a lot of people who can't afford the level of organic. And so I think that's a shame, but that's a specific market. So if there is a possibility of having, you know, something like that for folks who really, you know, who do need to be a little bit more careful with their money, that would be a great thing.
Yeah, that is a really interesting point that you make. When you talk to people about meal planning or food waste or preservation, what are some other things that you share with them that is surprising or that they may not have known?
Oh, goodness. one thing that we hear a lot, and so it might not be a surprise to people, but sort of in the larger food picture, you know, in our region and our specific community, is that, 3% or 3 days. So that we have about 3 days, if there were some sort of reason why food was cut off to Juneau or shipping was cut off to Juneau, we have about 3 days in the grocery store. I don't really know exactly where that number comes from. Mm. But to be safe, 3 to 5 days, you know, for a community, because we have such a, you know, as you need it kind of system throughout our nation now. And so what you want to try to do is actually build up some of the storage of food that you have in your house as well to give your family a bit more resilience, both if you... you know, if someone loses their job or someone has a health issue or a baby or something, just so that you have that security in your home, that you've got extra food in your house, and things like that. So that idea that we really only have a couple of days of food in our grocery stores. And we, of course, learned that recently with toilet paper. So, you know, and a few other products that we struggled with. And so that is actually the case, is what could happen with food as well. And so so that's another thing, that when you have a food plan and you kind of know what you're going to do, you can build up some of your pantry so that it will last a little bit longer if you needed to, you know, have that happen for whatever reason. And so that's one that I talk with folks about, that we don't always think a lot about until it's right on top of us.
Well, speaking of food keeping or keeping a store, let's talk about expiration dates.
Oh, yeah.
Would you eat a can of store-bought beans from 2016 or so?
Absolutely.
I would.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, so that, this is such a complicated thing. Or actually, it's not all that complicated. So the dates that are put on packages, almost all of them, with the exception of some food for infants, are basically either for use by the food seller, so they know when to, you know, move things around, or they are best buy. So when I teach lots of food preservation classes, you know, to people who are preserving food at home, and basically the party line really is best quality 1 year when you can something up, but safety for years and years and years. So if a food is frozen and it remains frozen, what you're concerned about is quality reduction. So you'll get freezer burn, and eventually it will be inedible because of freezer burn. It's not dangerous to you. It would just be unpleasant to eat. And with things in cans and jars that don't require refrigeration, really, again, it's the same thing. If they were either canned at home using USDA and cooperative extension recommendations, or if they, you know, were commercially canned and you can tell that the, you know, the can has never been dented, the jar hasn't been broken, you know, things like that, then you've got years. You have years with those, but the quality will reduce. And of course, you know, commercially manufactured stuff, they don't want you to have something that's yucky quality. So, and they want you to turn things around too, you know, so there's different things on that. So really, and even things that go in the refrigerator, the use by date does not mean that it is going to be dangerous for you on that date. In fact, milk, for example, will last significantly longer than that use by date. And the way that you need to tell whether something is going bad is your senses. You know, if on that use by date, or you, you know, I have accidentally purchased milk that was a week past, open it up, smell it. If it's fine, it's fine. If it tastes fine, it's fine. And it's been refrigerated, et cetera. You might want to use it a little bit quicker just because it is a little bit older, but, yeah, that is a huge thing on food waste. So I'm glad you brought that up. It's just misunderstanding that things don't become dangerous on that date. Their quality starts to reduce on that date.
That is really good information to know. I wasn't really sure about that myself, so I'm glad I asked as well. Sarah Lewis, thank you so much for talking to me today about reducing food waste and about your experience being chosen as a Juno climate change solutionist. One last question. Quickly, I was just wondering how you got so interested in food preservation and this whole concept of reducing food waste. What is your origin story there?
Oh, my origin story. Well, a long time ago, I was on the Sustainability Commission. And so we started really looking at lots of different topics that were important to Juno in terms of community resilience. This was, gosh, I don't know, when did Sustainability Commission start? Several years ago. And one of the topics was food. And at that time, that's the one that grabbed me as being of the most interest to me, you know, realizing that we really are not resilient. We do not have a resilient food system in Juno at all, in Southeast Alaska, in Alaska in general, but definitely Southeast Alaska and Juno. And so on the commission, we started a couple of different projects, like the food festival, the annual food festival, and a farmer's market and things like that. And those have morphed over the years. But that's where I really started learning more about it and thinking about it. And at the time, I was in a completely different profession. And then as I was looking at changing professions, I really started thinking about food in my own household and learning to hunt and learning to do wild harvest and garden more. And, you know, for me, it was container gardening. And so just dabbling more and more in those areas, you know, writing about it a little bit in the newspaper here and there. And then the Cooperative Extension Service, which, you know, this is one of the main things we do is food security throughout Alaska from all different angles. When this position was available, I decided that maybe this is really the direction that I wanted to spend a lot of time in. And I have for 8 years and I love it.
Well, I really admire your efforts and your passion, and especially your drive to teach others about all of this. So, Sarah Lewis from the Cooperative Extension Service here in Juneau, thank you so much for talking with me today. Really enjoyed your article and your profile by Anjuli Grantham.
Thank you so much. And thanks to Anjuli for doing the project. It was a great project.
Definitely. Take care.